Does anyone have something to say from yesterday or a question? We have one question I'll get to about love. Yes.
Yesterday you were talking about the pretentiousness that we often live with. And I was feeling that a lot yesterday and this morning. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit more about that. And it's like maybe its connection to fear and authenticity.
So about pretension, living for others, the connection to fear and authenticity. Yep. What did you find in connection to fear? Possible. So April's saying that the first thing that comes to mind in connection to fear, between pretension and fear, was for her her realization yesterday of how much of her life is that pretension. And to bear that realization, to actually be confronted by it, she says is scary, because it seems overwhelming. It seems like it would be really hard, even if necessary, to find another way. Okay. And another perspective is that when we allow that confrontation, the fact that we allow the confrontation shows that there's some strength, because it is very overwhelming, and it's so overwhelming and scary that it's a good reason not to look. So it's scary, but the fact that you saw for more than a half second also reveals a strength that's a healthy kind of strength, not like a... Another way to say it is not as strength, but if we talk about pride and shame, where my noticing how much I'm living in this interface of others, with others, what they think of me, how I look, etc., it's overwhelming to see that there's a lot of moments of that. That has a lot of momentum. It will take work. But the easiest way, what usually happens when we see something like that about ourselves, about the way we've been living, is that it hurts our pride and we feel ashamed. And we run away. But another direction to feel into, if you notice that there's a lot of what we could call surface activity, and less energy and attention left for depth, is whether that surface activity, that being involved in the persona, in presentation, in judgment. Where does it come from? What is the motivation to be involved in the persona? Not motivation in a superficial sense, but in a kind of that oomphy kind of way. The motivation, that the cause, you could say. And also then, by being involved in the persona, what is also the result, what happens? And it seems one possibility, one perspective is that there's lack. There's a belief in the feeling of not enoughness, not rightness, not okayness. Which is already some kind of comparison, usually. Or it's either based in comparison, they are together, I'm not together. They are calm and I am not calm. They are happy, I am not happy. Whatever. So it's partly already, it could be based in comparing, or it could be that I feel something uneasy, and then comes the otherness and the comparing. This is very oomphy, subtle, not so much words in the mind, but more of like an inner posture that happens. And to feel, where does fear get involved in that? Is it true that where there's other, there's fear? Or does it feel more true that there's fear and then there's other? Just trying to feel, trying to be receptive for the experience to kind of come about, that we could actually feel it in real time, so to say. Or we can rewind to our experience and replay and try to feel as we replay an experience. And what do you find to be the root? Is it a place of lack, not enoughness, not okayness? And is that just a way of taking our actual experience, which is a shaky experience? Our experience is a fluid experience, and it's easy to take it as not quite right, not enough, because we can't hold on to it, we can't grasp it. So is it that there's fear in response to our experience, and I fear it's not quite right, then it's like something's not right with me. They seem to have it going on pretty well over there. And then what is the inner posture that happens? What is the outer posture that happens? What is the posturing? I'd like to tell a short story from this week, from my life. On Tuesday night, I Skyped home, but we couldn't Skype because at home was an electrical storm, and so they had to unplug the computer and turn off the internet because there was lightning around. And then the whole next day I couldn't get through, and that night, so I think, was it Tuesday or Wednesday night that it started? Anyway, the next night, I got through, and the first sentence was, "Oh, we have so much to tell you." And I was looking forward to a little description of the swimming pool and the horses and the river, but that was not the story. So there had been lightning, and lightning had struck not far from our house, and there was a big wildfire. burning for hours, like days, very close to our house. And people were safe, things were in danger. People were away from the house. Police came to make sure that the people were away from the house. And the horses were still up. And then my partner got a phone call in the morning saying, you have to evacuate the horses now, the fire's coming. And then the wind changed. And then again in the evening, you have to evacuate the horses. And then it was okay again. So for, I don't know, at least 48 hours, I didn't know if the next Skype call would be that the house is now black and empty. And so finally, today, the fire is not just under control, but extinguished. And the house is not burned down. So. And the reason that the story especially comes to mind now is wanting to describe when my partner had the chance to pack a bag to leave. There was plenty of time. It was not a hurry. But the bag stayed half empty. And apparently this is not so uncommon. And I want to help you enter that experience where this is a place we went to 5 years ago, and it needed a lot of work, and a lot of people helped to do a lot of work to make it very rustic but very nice place to be. And finally it starts to be like, rustic but livable. And so there's horses, and then there start to be more nice things and not just survivable. So all of that love that went in, all of that work, all of the time, and then the house itself and everything in the house. A strike of lightning that happened at the beginning of the night, and the helicopters can't bring the water in the nighttime. So burning all night in a very windy place. I want you to know about how good it is. If you could, I know it's hard to imagine, but, or it's easy to imagine and hard to really feel. Just to walk away from everything with a half empty, half full suitcase. Because what are you going to take? There's a story from India that it's interesting. There was a hermit who lived a very simple life with very little. And he did a lot of meditation, and he had lots of good experiences, and his teacher said, I can't teach you anymore. And he said to his teacher, so where can I go? Because I'm not finished. And the teacher said, well, you're not going to like this, but the only person who can help you is the king. King Janak is enlightened, and he'll give you the teaching that you need. And the hermit thought it was strange, but he was willing to follow his teacher's advice. And so he approached the palace and said to the guard, I'm here to meet the king. And the guard, well, I'll check about that. And the king said, yes, let him in. King Janak gave him supper and said, okay, your room is down the hall to the left. I'll see you in the morning. And so the hermit got to the room, and he thought there must be some mistake because it's really big and it's full of silk sheets and pillows and pictures of naked people and wine on the table. And Now it would be different. There would be a big TV. A 100 channels or whatever. And he thought, well, I guess if I can sleep anywhere, I can sleep anywhere. So he slept on the, he went onto the silk bed and he was lying down and he looked up and saw that there was a very sharp sword hanging down by a thin thread above the bed. And he didn't sleep much. And when he got to the king's audience in the morning, he tried to hide his anger, but what do you mean, hanging a sword over my bed? But he managed not to say anything, and then he noticed that the king was there, and there were like people performing, doing entertainment, and there was such a sumptuous big breakfast, and the hermit thought he was going crazy. What is going on here? And the king said, how did you sleep last night? And then the hermit just burst into tears or rage. He wasn't sure what. How do you expect me to sleep with a sword over my bed? And what are you doing pretending to be a teacher living like this? And in a way, we could end the story right there. To tell the end of the story would be almost too much, too many words. But the king said, I would have no problem sleeping in that bed. And the hermit still was stuck in his place and said, yeah, you like silk sheets. I can sleep anywhere. I can sleep on a rock. What about the sword? And King Janak said, I could sleep anywhere. And when you can sleep anywhere, you can enjoy life without any unnecessary suffering. So the fear of death of any kind, of every kind, but especially death of who we think we are, keeps us from living. So what is love? Did anyone have any experiential investigation of the question since yesterday evening?
I thought it was rather eating meth in the season. Because at one point you compare love and what's the difference between love and judgment. And I thought judgment would be more like eating sand.
Yes. Great. And there is, I think, in experiential love, there's very much the feeling of nourishment. And very much what is more intimate than eating? Eating is something more intimate than sex. Maybe breathing and eating and drinking. In terms of the body life. And there's something about love that's not only body life intimacy, where eating, where there's nourishment. And also the giving of the nefesh. What else? Anything else?
what kind is it? It's like drinking water that was so pure that all the other water I'd ever drunk had done nothing. And then drinking that, it was like your thirst was being quenched.
Yeah. And then we have a question of when there's experiential pure water and experiential other water, how do we live? What do we do with that? Also, as Kate was speaking, I had the feeling of if we can feel that feeling of thirst quenched, pure water as a great metaphor for that other kind of quenching. Quenching is a good English word. Do you know it? The feeling of, so we're made for love. Like our bodies are made to eat. Maybe what we are, other than body and mind, is made for love and pure water. Like pure water. Anything else? Difference between emotional love and some other love, if any. Just if it pops.
What about shared evolution? Shared evolution?
Mm-hmm. Say more. Emotional love, not emotional love, shared evolution.
Maybe on the road in between?
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah. I think you're right. I think that what I see is that many of us, if not most of us, actually need experiences of personal emotional love, where we feel personally loved, to start to be able to recognize food and water of all different kinds. So that would be how the more interpersonal or emotional love can help. So if we want to put it in a very cold, unemotional way, we exchange symbols. What means love to you, I can do, like a kind of play. And then your system recognizes that and says, ah. So we can exchange symbols of care, of non-separation. And it does take away, it starts to soothe the kind of shock and stress and over-alertness and not trusting. And so where we spend so much of our lives up in the emotion and thinking can start to be satisfied, be quenched, and relax, release, and allow us to experience the other rooms of the castle. And then what about the other direction, where non-emotional love, does it also flow in some way through shared evolution to the personal, to the emotional? You don't have to start thinking now and try to get an answer, but we can have the question if something pops then.
I think gentleness is so very important. When I'm gentle with myself, I can feel this love for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just this.
Yeah.
And then I can. Then it's. I'm less judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
I can give more easily.
Yeah.
I can give gentleness because I have it inside.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something like that.
Yeah. Could you hear? No. Okay. She says that for her, gentleness is so important that when she's gentle with herself, then it sounded like very naturally love for herself comes, and then there's less judgment. It's easy to give. It's easy to be gentle to others because also there's gentleness with her. There's one other part, very beautiful. Is that good enough? Summary? Something's missing. I wish you could help me.
It's not tense. It's soft.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like.
That's right. That's what it was. Yeah. It's like. That's what it was. It's very important. So, for Birgit, the response to gentleness, or we could again be cold and say, like, signs of gentleness, whatever, but there starts to be an atmosphere of gentleness. And then naturally, and with naturally, naturally, love is. Or how would you say? And what's so good about it is it's not something that we made. And so there's not a feeling of, am I making this up? Is it fitting? Is it? It's not constructed. Neither the is really done on purpose, nor is the love done on purpose. It just is. And this beautiful gesture that we were missing. May I say that it feels like as if we drink gentleness and are holding on to our suffering, holding on to solidity, holding on to separation. Whatever is habitually tensed but is actually not, even though I can't stop myself from being tense, it's not that it's relaxed, it's not that it's who I am in the language that's been happening the last few days. It's not that it's natural. It's just become normal. And with a little gentleness, it quite easily, in the moment, quite easily, is gone. And then that cave is discovered. That is it my love? Is it our cave? But the love we can feel. And it's quenching. So gentleness as quenching, and that can come in as if, whether from the outside in the sense of I can do things to create a gentle atmosphere. I can be around people who express gentleness or whatever. That's like something that we could soak in from the outside, and then it unveils something else. So this just brings another kind of field for inquiry, experiential feeling into, maybe questioning. Another question it is to open the field of inquiry. Is there a difference between love and awareness? Is there a difference between awareness and love? And then what about attention? Bringing attention, not attention, but attention, attending to. Where does attending to attention, how does it overlap or fit or not overlap or fit with awareness, love? So again, if we can let the questions land and not be mental, but still let the questions come, trusting that we are experiencing all the time. And so there's a chance to let the question meet curiosity and experience. And attention can be an expression of love. It can be an expression of gentleness. Attention sometimes happens on purpose. We turn our attention to green leaf, sound, feeling, problem. And other times attention is with something, kind of, in actually a quite different way. Spontaneously, there's like a spark. And it so happens that we notice something, something gets noticed. Something comes to our attention. And it's interesting, I find, when we're in a kind of open state, relatively more open, more easily something comes to attention, whether it's outside me or inside me. And this may be part of the movement of love or awareness. It may be worth receiving that and allowing. So now we have another word and field of inquiry, creativity, to meet what comes to attention. So what is creativity? I find is a great question also to start to enter what is love, to enter the field of inquiry of what is love. What is creativity? I heard someone speaking, I think it was one of those TED Talks, TED Talks online, I'm not sure, but about creativity. And how she considers it terribly dangerous it is in our culture that creativity is considered to be something that an individual has or doesn't have. But in this case, she was talking about, especially for the person who has it, how dangerous it can be, this cultural idea that someone has it or doesn't. And that not so long ago in the history of Western culture, it was commonly considered that creativity was in a kind of invisible in-between realm, like the genie or whatever, the genie or the muse, which was not in the person, but, for example, lived in the walls of the studio or the workshop. That was the way of thinking of it. And so someone who had the office of sculptor would go into the workshop and was accompanied by creativity that was not personal. was within a space of creativity that was not his or her personal muse demon. What we have now is that it has a demonic quality. It goes, if it's my personal power, it's terrible if it goes well. And it's terrible if it doesn't go well. The person is riding on how it goes and the reception to how it goes. And so there was a tradition apparently in North Africa when, I think it was with music, someone would be performing music and would become incandescent, would become just so alive and in the music that the person was alight. And the people who were listening, who were also participating in that creativity of the music, would say, Allah, Allah. And this came to Spain now as Olé. And they still freely express if the music is on fire in a good way. Olé. Or if someone makes a gesture, I noticed, of kindness, even. Olé. It's clear that it's not the person doing it. But the person is needed for it to happen. The person can allow it to happen. The person is necessary. We are necessary. But it's not all up to us. And when it's that true creativity, whether it's the gesture of kindness or the music that's beyond, or a simple moment that's beyond, there is the background of training and readiness of all different kinds, but especially psychological. The confidence to let something vast be, and no matter how it's received, just doing our part. It came to mind in this reflection for myself, different kinds of help and the feeling that I felt when people tried to help me or helped me, the feeling of that interaction. And there was one where there was a very, very kind person with very good intentions and very lots of spiritual background and very high meditation who really wanted to help me. And it was horrible. I really was wanting to run away. And then there was another person with also background, but not quite such transcendental experiences and more down to earth, and she also helped. And it was quite amazing to just be together with something that wasn't even quite a problem. Something uncomfortable in my neck is what it was. But it was worth attending to as not a problem that we're not exactly trying to fix it, but we're together with this situation which has some pain involved. So there wasn't pity and there wasn't like the need to be successful at helping. And in fact, now that I think about it, I don't even remember if it helped whatsoever with my neck. But I still remember the moment. this very bare moment and very good. So much better. The neck was a good excuse to meet in that way. Does anything come to mind to say? In this mind.
I wanted to say something about creativity. Because I think everyone is creative. Mm-hmm. And for me, creativity is truth. Mm. I mean, you can be creative when you sweep the floor.
Yeah.
As long as you're true, truly doing it. You know, you possibly do some things or you just do it like this.
Yeah.
You know, it's something from inside which comes out and just, yeah, is there? Even, I mean, if you create a chocolate pudding, this can be so creative.
Yes, please.
You know what I mean? Mm.
Yeah. Of course. And even if you don't create a chocolate pudding, but you're just there's another one of these little seed lines that, or at least for me, it's a seed teaching line. Seed in the sense of short and in the sense of how much it could grow and feed us, potentially. The context of the teaching is talking about what we can attend to. So we can pay attention to people. We can pay attention to body experience. We can pay attention to mental experience. We can pay attention to sounds. We can pay attention to anything. And what we're paying attention to in the language of this teaching would be like what's been created. So even the sound, okay, the sound was created by something, as well as by its interaction with my brain, co-created. And sometimes it's very relaxing and releasing to pay attention to the created, to pay attention to things. But there's also a suggestion, and this is this little seed, of being in touch with not just what now is available to pay attention to, but being in touch with just before now. And I like this also in talking about literal creativity as not being my inner muse that's mine, and then my creation that I made that's mine, and that I live or die on how it's received. But being in that, the joy of what moves, whether it's love or awareness or creativity. And it is important what we do. It has its importance. It can change lives, our own included. It's just as important sweeping and making chocolate pudding and everything and not doing anything. In touch with that, just before now. Not just the things, but just before the things. And I think that then things kind of take their place. No thing is, could be the end of the world. Even the end of the world, even literally if that would happen, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of aliveness or life. So I just wonder about staying in that, staying with the creativity, even as the creativity flows through, staying with the love that kind of rises, or that we sink into, or whatever, that is unveiled. Even if we also let the love move us to do and not to do. Anything else?
Jaya, I have a question. After this, it might be a bit useless, but still it's coming to my mind since
yeah.
the beginning.
Yeah.
I hear and I feel when you show and when you talk about being open like this, talking about love. But here is my question. What is your point of view concerning a situation where one person would be open like this, or would think that he or she is, and in front, he or she would be confronted to great brutality, big violence of someone. Of someone close, important. I'm really talking about the word is really brutality.
Yeah.
Something strong, a lot of
yes.
hatred. Or maybe the, I don't know if we can talk about opposite. My question is how to behave in this type of situation precisely.
Yeah.
When you are, or you think you are fully open.
Yeah.
And someone else in front of you, someone important, is putting inside yourself so much darkness, so much
yeah.
nasty things.
Yeah.
For you, what would be the best
yeah.
way of being?
Yeah. I like an image that Jesus gives, that he's telling his friends to go out into the world, and he says, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. So it's like you're open, and your job is to stay with the creativity or the awareness or the love. But know that there are wolves and you're going among them and you're a sheep. You are what they want to eat. And then his advice was to be gentle as doves and shrewd as snakes, so clever as snakes. I think, first of all, it's helpful to be able to practice in less intense situations, to practice recovering what we spoke of with Rose, where there's a natural protective gesture that sometimes can happen. Sometimes when there's openness and the creativity and even better than intuition, a direct kind of line, direct action that's in tune, there sometimes is just an avoidance of the situation. But it's not that just by being open, I have a guarantee of safety. That's not true. There's not a guarantee of safety. So it is important to practice and get the flow where there can be protective action and avoidance of danger when possible. when it's not possible, we come to a very place of so much tenderness that it's very difficult to speak of, but I'm going to. And I can say, because of having had this experience in my body, the same that you speak of, I'm going on my experience as well. It would be more wonderful if we could come to an experience that the body is not all that I am, simply through meditation and observing and gentleness and an unfolding. But sometimes it happens through terrible experiences. And I can give just acknowledging the tenderness and still saying our potential freedom. If we just for the possibility of being able to hear and think, if we back away from thinking about physical violence, if we think of verbal, which is already terrible, the possibility that if someone could say anything terrible to me, about me, and with force, and the possibility that there was no protective gesture, there was no earplugs, and there was no avoiding the person. So there's not my fault in experiencing this, receiving this aggression at all. But there's also we have the possibility that there's absolutely no need for that person's confirmation, so what they say doesn't enter in the same way. So it's not that we think the person should do that, say that, etc. We can even feel the force of the energy of in words, even without physical violence. But there's a possibility of someone saying anything, spitting on us, anything, and the confidence, this trust, is what steadies us. It's not trusting people to be nice. It's not trusting me to manipulate people to make me safe. And it's not trusting life to be pleasant. And so the one way to say it is, what is it that is trustworthy? What is trust? If we're not saying and we're not pretending that the world is safe. But if it's helpful if we know actual human beings, that this is their experience. And I know some. And they're not cold people, they're not turned off, they're warm human beings. Someone could say anything to them and do anything to them, and I've even seen that happen, and there's not a ripple. So our job still, first of all, if we can have protection, if we can be away from that situation, please, as soon as possible. Whether it's right or wrong, just find out later. But when that's already happened, or if it would happen, in a certain way, a terrible experience shows us what is untouched. Everything may be shaking. My body still shakes from my experience as a child. So everything is shaking. That's not like a sign of being wrong or whatever. Everything is affected, it seems. But there's a quietness somewhere. And that, in the language of this week, that is who you are. From there, there's tremendous compassion, kindness, and action that can come to prevent wherever possible. there's also somewhere where that is quiet and it is willing to receive all that must be received for the whole system to heal as much as it can, with infinite patience, not a deadline of I should be finished now, aren't I done with this? So a few things that can help is coming to a place of it's not your fault. So the over alertness that can happen of trying to prevent it or whatever can fall away, dissipate. But also, and this is where it's really important that we get the not our fault part first as much as we can. But to really feel where the hook in me of wishing for someone to be kind, wishing for confirmation, wishing for signs of love from someone else. Because sometimes that, it's very deep, it's not a conscious thing, and again, it's not our fault that that's operating. It's completely our training. But that's where we can, through gentleness, allow that belief in lack, if we can say it that way, we can allow that hook, that expected and wanted love from that important person. And where then the openness got stuck in a literal openness sometimes. So without it being fault, we can still feel the operation. Does that make sense? Any sense? Thank you. Let's have a few minutes silence together.